Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Well, welcome back. We're back from our summer break and we're raring to go. Looking forward to discussing all things business over the next little while. Welcome back, Dave.
Good to be back here, yeah. And it's still warm outside. You think it was the summer?
Indian summer. Yeah. It's an Indian summer, so it is. As usual, to begin with, in a few moments' time, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we discuss some of today's business headlines.
And in the business of this week, it's the business of direct marketing. John Colgan from from Ireland's oldest business-to-business data company, the Bill Moss Partnership, will be here with me in a few minutes' time.
After that, David Bell from the HR department is here for our regular look at HR issues this week, with the return to the office for those who've been working remotely beginning from next Monday, the 20th. We chat about what employers need to do in advance of that return.
Annie Tyrrell looks at the 1 billion Celtic interconnector project being undertaken by Airgrid.
Yeah, an amazing project, running cables all the way from France across to Ireland.
But the old Northern Ireland one got the knock on the head during the week. Boris's tunnel or bridge to the north is not going to happen, apparently.
Finally then, Paul Allen of Paul Allen & Associates PR will join myself and Dave for a general discussion on the economy, including Brexit, and what the outlook for the next few months look like. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, well, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The text line is open and the number is, as usual, 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or, of course, you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So welcome along to the Nearby Business News Desk, and myself and Dave, now we're going to look at some of today's business headlines. First up, Dave, Ryanair are calling for a plan for the aviation sector to get it back up and running.
Yeah, well, never far from the headlines, Michael O'Leary says Ireland needs an aviation recovery plan if it is to capture its fair share of the rebound in the sector, the group chief executive said today. Speaking before the airline's AGM in Dublin this morning, Mr. O'Leary said, while Shannon is getting back to pre-pandemic capacity and Ryanair is close to agreeing a recovery plan with Dublin and Cork, the airports need more help from the state. He said, we need more government actions and decisions on this area. The one thing we've been critical of, Eamon Ryan, Minister of Transport, is that there's not an aviation recovery plan yet, despite the fact that the plan has been sitting on his desk for 15 months, the Ryanair boss said. Meanwhile, Spain and Portugal, Italy are all out there with their recovery plans, reducing taxes on aviation. We need to compete if Ireland is going to capture a fair share of its growth, and Ireland can only capture its fair share of growth because Ryanair is Irish, he said. We are based here in Ireland, and the first country we want to grow in is Ireland. But if we be taxed out of existence, we'll go to other European countries,
never
he said.
Never want to miss an opportunity.
As he usually says. Yeah. He said Ryanair is currently doing extraordinary airport discount deals around Europe and receiving growth recovery incentives all over the place. Now, he said the last 18 months has been the most traumatic in the company's history. He said that prior to the pandemic, the airline had 30 years of unbridled growth, except for 9/11 and the Gulf War. This is the first event where we were grounded for effectively 18 months. Yeah. And so was everything else, by the way.
It's been tough. Yeah, he's not alone. Yeah. He's not alone. Maybe somebody should let him know there was a pandemic happening. Now you've some good news on the jobs front.
Yeah, Stripe, the digital payments company founded by the Colliston brothers, plans more jobs for Dublin. The location is the first engineering site outside of the US for the company. Now, the processor of digital payments, Stripe, will add hundreds of new engineering jobs in Dublin over the next 3 years. The US most valuable technology startup said the new roles are in addition to the 1,000 jobs the company said it would create in Ireland over the next 5 years when Ireland's sovereign wealth fund planned was part of a funding round that lifted Stripe's valuation to $95 billion. Wow, in March. Yeah. Amazing, isn't
Monopoly
it?
Monopoly money, isn't it?
It was founded by the Irish brothers Patrick and John Colliston in San Francisco in 2018. Stripe's earlier job announcement contributed to employment growth among multinationals in Ireland, returning towards pre-coronavirus pandemic levels for the first 6 months of 2021.
Very Very good. A great success story. Great Irish success story. And now a worldwide global success. Now, the NTMA, they're the people charged with getting the government their money, basically, Dave. And they've been out back to the market. You have a bit of an update on the bonds situation.
Yeah, they sold 750 million of treasury bonds in an auction, reaching its target. Now, the short-term bills, which have a maturity of a very short time of 5 months, were sold at a yield of minus 0.064%. Total bids received, they were totally oversubscribed, were 1.83 billion. That's 2.25 times the amount on offer. Now, last week in a different bid, the agency sold 1.25 billion in long-term treasury bonds, bringing the total raised at this point to 16 billion. Now, they expect to raise up to 20 billion in the bond markets this year to cover a budget chasm, actually, caused by the government's response to the pandemic and the potential fallout from Brexit as well. So obviously exceptional borrowing going on. Yeah. But at reasonably good rates there and very popular in the market as well.
Yeah, they're being fully subscribed, and that means we continue to get money to run the country.
The Business Of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Well, in the Business Of this week, it's the business of direct marketing. And now, John Coughlin from Ireland's oldest business-to-business data company, Bill Moss, is now here with me. You're very welcome to Near FM. Not your first time, you said. You were here.
Thanks,
with
Dave.
No,
it's not the first time I've been
before.
Here. I've been here on the show before. The great setup, in fairness to you. It's a really nice place to come into and a busy place to be.
Very good. You're very welcome. Maybe you can start by outlining a bit of the background to your business and its activities. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I've been in the business of direct marketing now for about 30 years. So originally, I started off working for a company called Compass, which was a business database set up, I think, originally in Sweden. And then it was franchised worldwide. They had a very good way of classifying businesses in terms of SIC classifications and NACE codes, similar to NACE codes. So, you know, you were able to identify specific products right down to product level. If you needed a screw, if you needed a particular thing for an engineering piece of equipment, you could get it very easily. So that's essentially where I started working. In terms of what in Ireland then, we had the franchise in Ireland, and we grew that by adding new businesses to that, you know, manufacturing businesses originally, because they would have used it more so than, you know, other types of businesses. But there's only a small number of manufacturing businesses in Ireland, probably about 8,000 in total, I would think. So we grew that then by adding other businesses, you know, from into that, you know, such as, you know, retail markets, service businesses, and so on. And if by the time, you know, Compass was sold to Impost in 2006, there was probably about, you know, close to 60 or 70,000 businesses on that file. So after Compass, I went working for Bill Moss. So that I'm with Bill now for about 11 years. And he's the biggest database in Ireland, business database in Ireland. There's about 116,000 trading businesses on that file, all of which are primary research, you know, tele-verified. So the data is very much up to date and compliant in terms of, you know, the way the data is gathered by our tele-salespeople inside in the office. They ring each company and verify the details. Generally, it's the managing director's name or the owner of the business. It's very basic information, you know, number of employees, business address, you know, obviously the classification, the NACE classification, the SIC classification is very important. And after that, then, it's just basic details. We would obviously have telephone number, like I said, because we update them ourselves. You know, I would deal with any type of business, really. I mean, everybody from, you know, the large telecommunication companies right down to somebody who's looking to maybe, you know, start a new business, really, or even contact companies in a particular location, even in a particular industrial estate. I mean, you can be really specific. Like I said, I mean, information, I think, is going to be, you know, very important going forward. It'll be like the new oil, if you will. You know, data and information is going to be really, really important. People need good quality information to be able to make decisions. They need good quality information to be able to make, you know, basically to be able to function. Businesses need good quality data to work together. So that's what
I think. In Ireland, traditionally, people have been very acute and private and all that sort of thing. Do businesses and people see this as a bit of a dark art?
I don't think so. I mean, there is GDPR issues absolutely around all data. And like I said, when we contact these companies, you know, they have an opportunity to opt out at that point, and that's the way it works. In terms of the data we hold, it's very basic. I mean, you know, it's info at addresses. We don't have personal email addresses. You know, that's something that people ask for a lot. And we don't have them at the moment. We don't supply them because of GDPR issues.
Yeah, that was just going to ask you next. The recent GDPR changes a couple of years ago, did that enhance your business or in any way curtail it?
Well, it's a bit of both, because we're the only company, like I said, who actually contacts each record individually by telephone to update them. So we're the only company doing that. And that gives us, the compliance aspect of it. Now, it would be great to have a personal email for, every contact in the company but on the database, but we won't have that, and we don't have that. Now, there are lobbies, the UKDM Association, European Direct Marketing Association, which are lobbying businesses to be able to make email addresses, not personal email addresses, but, contact name at, company name at, available to use. I mean, it's called legitimate interest. It means basically if you can contact a company, the information is relevant to them or that particular person, that it should be allowed to be used rather than, come under the GDPR. GDPR is very, very strong, obviously, on consumers, and that's, I think, where its main area is driven at, but obviously businesses come in under that as well. And this lobby that is looking, the UKDM Association, these European lobby groups as well, they're trying to push towards, because businesses need information to function. You need to be able to contact somebody to sell your information to somebody else. You need to be able to, talk to people and promote your companies. And that's, like I said, what we can do.
So has technology a part to play? Has it changed your model or your business over the years? How is that?
Good question. Back in the day when I was originally working with Compass, we used to print off, direct mail letters with WordPerfect, which, if anybody remembers it, it was like a, letter, one letter at a time, one letter at a time, one letter at a time. And if you made a mistake in it, you had to go right the way back to the start and start all over again. And it was a nightmare. It was just at the beginning. These days now, everything is a lot more streamlined. We still provide data the same way. It goes out in an encrypted Excel file at the moment. It's pretty much raw data. We have invested recently, and we are investing recently. We've had some investment from the Business Post that will allow us to make the data more easily available to our customers. So, for example, they can go online, they can click the information that they want, they can download the information, and it's delivered to them in an email. So it takes a lot of the background work away from what I do day to day,
Yeah. So just in terms of sectors then, you said everybody, would a large supermarket chain, for instance, be interested in your services, or would it be more likely to be somebody, a telecoms company?
Again, it's a good question. We do a lot of work with some of the large supermarket companies, so Musgraves and, Dunn Stores and people like that, where they will take information and they will contact companies, especially around Christmas time, for these promotions that they're able to give their employees. So certainly we would do, but again, generally your usual supermarket, probably not so much,
Yeah.
It would tend to be more companies. For example, we're very busy at the moment. We're talking to a lot of office supplies companies, with people coming back to the office now. They need to be able to have, they want to have whatever the office facilities and whatever in place. So that's a busy area at the moment. Also, waste companies, it's a very competitive market.
Yeah.
They, but people coming back to the offices now within the next few months, and I certainly see a pickup by, the beginning of next year, in terms of hopefully more people being back at the office. Basically, even when I'm doing my, my usual, telemarketing or outbound kind of work, at the moment now, a lot of people aren't at the office. You call them up, and they're different.
Well,
they're working from home.
It's a different sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're probably not going to like this question, but is it possible to get your name removed from a list like this?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, there's one of the main ways of getting your data removed is if you can register with the NDD. It's called National Directory Database. Aircom used to manage it. It's managed by a private company at the moment. We've about 30,000 telephone numbers on that file, and we run that against the file on a monthly basis. So it means that basically anybody who doesn't want to be getting cold calls or marketing calls can be on that list, and they're removed off it. And we run that on a monthly basis, like I said, against our live files, and we supply that to clients who are using our data as well.
And just in terms of the revenue model, I'm not going to ask you exactly what it comes in and whatever, but do you charge for is it a fee-based membership, or is it a one-off payment?
It's a cost per thousand, basically.
Is it?
Moment,
that what
yeah.
it is?
Cost
yeah.
per thousand for the businesses. So, you can get a list of businesses, 1,000 businesses, for about €300, And that would keep you busy if you wanted to for about a month if you were calling those kind of companies.
Yeah.
But that's the basic model. It depends now. We obviously have clients who take larger amounts of data from us, but the standard cost, minimum order charge for a list, would be about €300.
And you mentioned you're part of a larger media organisation now, which is the Business Post Group. Has that enhanced your position?
It will be. Certainly will do. Like I said, it's early days now. It's just something that's happened in the last couple of months, but it's very exciting. And you know, it's a strong brand. And, you know, when you have a strong brand behind you, it makes everything a lot easier.
Yeah. And, of course, we regularly hear about the telly polls that are done on the Claire Bourne Show or on the Red Sea and people like that. So they obviously look for a demographic. So you would be useful to those organisations,
well,
I'm sure.
One of our main businesses, I mean, most of the businesses that we would deal with, our main clients would be a lot of the research agencies.
Yeah.
So your Behaviour and Attitudes, Amoric Research, Red Sea, these kind of companies. They use our dial a lot because they obviously need to be able to get through to people on the phone, you know. And like I said, they come back to us again and again, so they're obviously getting the results from the list.
And finally, the future.
Well, the future
in this digital age.
Well, I think, like I said, I mean, information is going to be the new oil. I mean, people are going to need to be able to have and data. I mean, not just data, but information comes through from all different directions there, from your phone, obviously through the radio, like we are today. You know, television, newspapers, print, everything. And it's all, you know, it's all part of the same package. I mean, people need to be able to make decisions quickly. And, you know, hopefully we can be able to help to do that.
John Coughlin from Bill Moss, thanks for coming to talk to us here at Nearby Business.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks, John. Very interesting chat there. A very unusual business. What kind of unique type business?
It's great. I love this because you get to talk to people who there is a business in this, which is great, and it's every part of our lives every day probably, and it touches us all because of the information. And it's a very legitimate and steady business. You know, it's great.
Great, interesting. Okay, in a very short time now, we're going to talk to David Bell for our usual look at the HR issues. And we're talking about what John was talking about there, people returning to the office.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
I'm joined now by David Bell for our usual look at HR matters. Hiya, David. Welcome back to the programme.
Evening, Declan. Great to be back.
Great to have you back, David. Yeah, now we're going to talk about the return to office. We've had probably a few chats about this over the last while, but towards the end of August there, government announced that next Monday, the 20th of September, would be the time when people could begin to return to office. A gradual return, I think they described it as. And I suppose, as usual, that raises a lot of questions that need to be answered and need to be thought about by employers and indeed by employees as well. So, I mean, talk us through it a little bit, David, to start with. What do you think or what do you see happening from the 20th with maybe some of the people that you would know and that you would be chatting to about this?
Yeah, I think, the main point is that it is part of the overall, it's the next phase. That was announced, as you say, at the end of August. So this is sort of the third, maybe the second or third important date in the calendar. So it is the beginning, I suppose, a gradual return to the workplace for many businesses. Obviously, there were plenty of businesses that stayed open and you know, had people in the building. But this is primarily the businesses that have most of their staff working from home. So the government feel it's now appropriate for those businesses to start to bring their employees back. And, you know, it is obviously, as I say, it's all connected to the overall lifting of the restrictions that we've operated under for the last 18 months or so.
Yeah, and indeed, as you said there, many people have gone to offices every day. And indeed, as the Taoiseach pointed out, you know, people like bus drivers, people in retail, Gardaí, obviously all the frontline workers in the healthcare environment all went to work every single day of the pandemic. So this is for the people who have been working from home and thinking about how they might go back. And I suppose things that employers will be thinking about, David, are, you know, things, can they talk to their employees about vaccinations? Are they allowed to talk to people about that? What is the guidance on that?
Yeah, this is one of the big, I suppose, big questions that's been floating around since the vaccine program has taken off, and obviously so many people are vaccinated. So the bottom line is currently the answer is no. The vaccine status of an employee, because it is a voluntary scheme, and people, you know, had the right to decide not to take it. The Data Protection Commissioner basically has said that the processing of vaccination data, which would obviously involve knowing it and asking about it, is not allowed under the current data protection legislation in Ireland. And it's deemed, I mean, the quote is, it's an unnecessary and excessive data collection for which no clear legal basis exists. Now, there were some exceptions to that allowed for public health. So in some frontline workers in the HSE, etc., perhaps they would be entitled to. But fundamentally, the answer is no. Now, what sort of has happened in practical terms is that anecdotally, or sometimes an employee will tell other employees or their manager or someone in the business that they're not, for whatever reason. But that doesn't really make any difference. Just because it's you discover it a different way than asking, that the GDPR, the Data Commissioner's guidance, still applies. So, you know, I think there is a bit of narrative around this that you know, some of the media coverage has gone back, and there's been such a focus on getting everyone vaccinated that I think it has slightly skewed the view that the perhaps people who are unvaccinated are at a higher risk. Certainly the vaccines, when they're working, prevent the individual getting less seriously ill, which seems to be the case, which is fantastic. But it doesn't, there's no corollary that someone who's not vaccinated is more likely or susceptible to getting an infection. That certainly doesn't seem to what the science is saying. That may have been a view, but I don't think that's accepted now. There's obviously plenty of people who are vaccinated who are getting infected. So what I'm sort of trying to focus on and trying to advise people is that really it's the risk of infected employees coming into the workplace that they should focus on. So to row it back to the protocols, the same rules apply for the moment, pending that there was meant to be new protocols issued. They haven't been to date, but they may come out. But fundamentally, you know, hand hygiene, social distancing, mask wearing where appropriate, that will all continue for a time anyway. And one of the things that I'm suggesting, perhaps, which I think was something that was missed under all of this, is antigen testing. For some reason, NEFID and the powers that be didn't seem to consider it to be a suitable testing tool. But I think in the current environment, a lot of people are voluntarily having a scheme, so whereby they offer it to employees. It's not mandatory, but you know, they're offering kits to employees, or they have some in the office. So if someone is feeling a bit under the weather and they're not sure whether to go in or not, at least an antigen test is some possibility that would pick up whether they're infected or not. And I think this is even more relevant to some extent because under the protocols, the general protocols outside the return to work, those who are vaccinated, if they're deemed to be a close contact, they do not have to self-isolate or get tested unless they're symptomatic. So, you know, I suppose one could argue ahead that they may be even slightly more of at risk if they come into the workplace. They could easily have COVID, but because they're not symptomatic, maybe that reduces the risk of them passing it on. I'm not a doctor, but they could have it and go into the workplace.
Yeah, sure.
So I think an antigen testing program of some sort, as they all be voluntary, might be, and a lot of people are looking at that as an initial sort of barrier to try and stop people who are infected, which I think is the purpose of this, is to try and reduce the risk of infection coming into the workplace.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, that, I suppose, together with all of the practical things that you outlined there, continuing with the social distancing, continuing with, you know, regular cleaning of the workplace, all of that type of thing, all in place. And you mentioned to have them all in place. And you mentioned earlier there are sort of key dates. We're talking about next Monday, the 20th of September, but also then the 22nd of October is another significant date where you know, according even to reports in recent days, this still seems to be on track, where practically all of those measures come to an end and we can get back to perhaps close to what it was like before?
Yes, that's the plan. And as you say, even the recent, you know, with the return to schools and some of the colleges are obviously gone back or starting to go back, the return to work will certainly, I think, result in more cases, possibly, depending on what the testing regime is going to be. But, you know, there's no doubt that it would appear from what we can tell that the plan to lift all restrictions apart from international travel on the 22nd of October will continue. So fingers crossed, but obviously that will mean face masks could be lifted, will be lifted, and then the social distancing will be removed. And even in terms of, you know, mixing in workplaces, and if there's a social element to work, you know, restaurants, the restriction on only vaccinated people and six people at a table. Obviously, the 65 and 75% for outdoor and indoor concerts for vaccinated people only. All of them are earmarked to be lifted. And I think the only one they have suggested, if all things go well, is the international travel. So obviously, you would probably still need PCR test or a COVID pass to travel.
Yeah.
Certainly into Ireland. Obviously, a lot of countries that people are traveling to. So, for example, and I only found this out recently, Declan, that the UK has treated Ireland as a common area of travel. So you don't need a vaccine cert of anything, of any description,
right,
to go into the UK, which is very good, I suppose, as people start to open up again. Obviously, there's a significant trade with them. But even a lot of the European countries will accept an antigen test, albeit a formal one, not one that you buy in your local shop at the garage. But obviously, it's a lot cheaper for people who are traveling now if they do an antigen test compared to a PCR test. So that will obviously, it would appear, to stay in place for some time. But I don't think that's going to affect too many people. Those who travel have probably started to anyway, and it just might make it a bit easier to travel, particularly.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose between now and then, just a reminder to everybody, to employers, that it's important to make sure that you put all these measures in place. There is, I suppose, the possibility that if you don't comply, you could get a visit from the HSA.
Yeah, I mean, they are the authority that trying to ensure compliance with the health and safety legislation. So they have been given increased funding to conduct inspections. And there has been, obviously, since COVID happened, that they have inspected businesses to make sure that there is compliance. I mean, like everything else, what happens if they find you're in breach? There is obviously fines under the legislation, but there is also, I suppose, an educational element to that. And so I suspect if you're flaunting it badly, they could come down on you. But if it's something that could be, you know, seen as something that you could do better, they may not be as vigorous in their enforcement. They'll just, you know, hopefully help you to get compliant. But you're right. I think, you know, in a strange way, it's not that different to what it was the last time we went back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which, exactly.
You know, sort of summer, and you know, where people were going back into the office, albeit this is a much more structured phase. They still ask people who didn't have to go in not to bring people into work. They didn't have to, they could work from home. That now is being lifted. So there is an expectation that everyone over the next probably 5 or 6 weeks will attend work in some shape or form, unless otherwise agreed, of course, with their employer. But that it is the beginning. And I suspect by the 22nd, they're hoping that most people will be back in the office where possible, unless they're, as I say, you know, alternative arrangements.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of those alternatives might be some kind of a blended working, but that's a whole other subject and maybe one we'll turn back and come back and talk about next week. David Bell from the HR department, thanks as usual for that. Really good look at people returning to the office, and hopefully that'll all go safely and well for those involved returning from next Monday the 20th. Thanks a million, David.
Thanks, Declan.
Coming up in the second part of the programme, so still to come on Nearby Business, very shortly now, myself and Dave are going to have a chat with Paul Allen of Paul Allen & Associates PR. We're going to talk about a range of subjects, Brexit, all sorts of European issues, and basically what's the outlook over the next couple of months, and see what is going to happen. After that, before we finish up, Jenny Tyrrell will be here with our weekly radio column, and we're going to this week look at the €1 billion Celtic interconnector project being undertaken at the moment by Airgrid, getting juice, electricity all the way from France, all the way to our fair isle here. And of course, we'd squeeze in a little bit of any other business before we finish up the programme too. So all of that to come on Nearby Business.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
How's it going, brother?
All right, what's up?
Are these guys any good?
Dude, these guys are class.
I hear they play the best homegrown music live. every Thursday night.
Yeah, on Near FM 90.3 from 8 till 9.
The Near FM Sessions.
Here at Near FM, we are participating in the community call to help combat the effects of COVID-19. The purpose of the community call is to coordinate community activity and community assistance to where it is needed. We ask our listeners to look out for each other. If your neighbours or relatives are required to stay at home, check with them to see if they need supports. And if you're in that category yourself, don't hesitate to ask for help. Whether it's with shopping, fuel delivery, collecting medicines, or any other necessities of daily life. The local authority helpline is there as a safety net to ensure that everyone is looked after. If you need assistance and you live in Dublin City, call 01 222 8555. That's 01 222 8555. If you need assistance and you live in Fingal, call 01 890 5000. That's 01 890 5000. Let's all stay safe together from all here at Near FM.
The Digital Experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
Si su hijo o hija tiene entre 12 y 15 años, ahora puede registrarse para que reciba gratuitamente la vacuna de la COVID-19. Normalmente, la COVID-19 causa enfermedad de leve a moderada en este grupo de edad, pero puede llegar a causar enfermedad más grave. Se ofrecerá la vacuna a todos los menores de este grupo de edad, pero es especialmente importante para quienes presenten afecciones de alto riesgo o si algún miembro de la familia tiene más riesgo. Para obtener más información y para registrarse, visite hse.ie del HSE
90.3.
This is Near FM.
And welcome back to the programme. And don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion this evening or comment on any of the stories or just say hello, you can get in touch at any time while we're on the air. The text line is open. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch indeed any time on Twitter at @nearby_business, hashtag localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
And welcome back once again. Paul Allen of Paul Allen and Associates PR is here now for a general discussion on the economic situation, including Brexit and what the outlook for the next few months looks like. You're very welcome to the programme, Paul.
Welcome back, chaps.
Yeah. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Yeah. Welcome back, chaps. Nice
Thank
to
you.
See you.
Thank you.
Lots of stuff going on, Paul. So maybe we'd just start off with coming out of the pandemic, the economic situation, maybe local government in Ireland, and then we can spread our wings across Europe and the world.
Yeah, and if I may explain to the reader and the listener, the fact is that in my day job, I'm paid to tell people what they don't want to hear. so if I don't sugarcoat this, you might understand what
Sorry.
The situation is.
Hit us with it, baby.
To be honest, Ireland is in a very serious situation. Post-COVID, you look at the various payments that have come out. HSE have done a good job and done various bits and pieces, but somebody's got to pay this massive COVID bar bill. Who's going to pay for that? We have a budget coming up on the 12th of October. There's issues there that are affecting people. But, you know, to be honest, the last since July, and again, as I said, I'm here to tell you what you don't want to hear, the Zappone Marion Hotel gate, we need to get over this and we need to move on, because Ireland is facing very, very serious issues, as I said, and we need to become more European and look at what's going on a European basis. But looking at what's happening, the cynic could say, oh, this is a wonderful smokescreen. The government are enjoying this. Let's keep talking about the latest twist on this is now who leaked the story. It's going to run and run. adults or children in government, they need to stop it, and we need to get back to running a country. Very serious issues. We've got housing, we've got healthcare, we've got jobs, we've got the phasing out of the PUP payments. Critical issues that need to be there. And you'll see in the coming days, the budget is coming up on the 12th of October. Watch the smoke screen, watch the kite flying, watch the stories that will be coming out as to how that's going to happen. And let's face it, it's heartbreaking to see. I don't know whether you go into town or visit Dublin around city centre. The place looks dreadful. It's appalling. It's like the worst war zone, God forbid, we've ever had to walk into. It's awful. And you think about people in retail who are trying to get back on their feet, trying to return staff to the workplace. Why go back to work when you're still getting your payments? You know, this is heartbreaking scenes. And also, the other contributing factor is we've all got used to buying stuff online. So why would you bother going to the high street, the supermarket, the shopping centre? Critical issues. Then when you add it, and I wrote a blog about this, the big issue that's going to come down the tracks for us in Ireland post-COVID, post-Brexit, logistics. How are you going to get truck drivers to come in, deliver these items? And if people are trying to buy things for Christmas, we have the RTE going to be pumping that out with the Late Late Toy Show. Isn't that fantastic? Great. But children are going to be wound up. Will Santy bring me this? Will Santy bring me that? The items are not going to come. Unfortunately, because it's not going to work. In terms of the blog I wrote, I talked about the, from the Suez Canal to the COVID issues that are happening, the business people in China trying to produce these items for Santa. And then you look at the hospitality sector coming back, trying to get staff, trying to run, trying to keep kitchens, trying to keep chefs. It's a big show. This is really, really difficult. And with respect to the government, they need to get this matter back to work. And if I can also say, well done, Declan, in the last interview there with David Bell, back to work. How do you bring people back to work? There's certain sections that make sense for people to be working at home carefully and a well-ventilated and properly designed room that they can work with, but I'm sure they want to get back. And whatever the skills are, you think about the young people who are trying to get into accountancy or any area, they're not going to learn it sitting at home. They need to be in the office environment, coming up to you and saying, listen, how does this work? What am I doing wrong? Mentoring people, driving them on. We've got to look at succession planning. And these are all critical issues.
Okay.
That
let's just go back to one of the earlier points there that you made in relation to the bar bill and the whatever. Every country in Europe, in the world, in fact, but in Europe, which is our local club, so to speak, have the same issues in relation to funding. The money has been paid. We were promised long-term loans. So everybody effectively has this 20 billion or 30 billion deficit per year in pro rata per country. So we're in the European club. So they obviously negotiated vaccines, as we know, for them, for each country. And that kind of eventually petered down to all the countries. So is this money, you know, money is something that is printed by organisations, you know, it's no longer backed by gilt edge guarantee. So, sure. You know, the money is just made up effectively, let's just say for the moment. So the money, everybody has got a monopoly money effectively to work on and work on, and inflation is under control for the moment, you know. But is this not a situation where all boats have risen and all boats will drop down at the same time because of the European club membership?
Sure, but also I think one thing that we're blessed about is that we have most companies that are born on the internet. Some of them, if not all of them, are paying tax. And that's, you see the exchequer figures at times, you see a bolstering of figures. They're keeping the rest of us going. GDP and industry and like business is out there. People are struggling. But business is busy. We've never been as busy in the last 2 years in the type of work that we do. In the PR communications business, and I assume that's right across the sector.
Well, it's an interesting mix at the moment because we never had this particular set of problems before. We have a mixture of the early 80s sort of labour in those days was flying, but we hadn't got much work. We've loads of work now. We haven't got enough labour. We haven't got enough materials. So the materials are not there to actually, the timber prices are doubled and the fuel prices are all gone. Everything has gone crazy. So what is causing this? Can that this not be fixed by the club, the buying bulk of European endeavour?
Really. I think what we need to also watch is the fact that we're hearing a lot of noise from our neighbour on the left at home. They keep having house parties and they're going mad and they're sacking people and firing people. And the Boris Johnson circus and the government that he has there, they're out there every day campaigning and making noise to try and keep people happy. But in fact, the British people, I think, are most unhappy. And as the paint comes off the whole Brexit thing, people are
realizing. Let's just talk about the Brexit thing.
If I may just say, in terms of, if you look at in the Northern Ireland situation, we have Geoffrey Donaldson, who was coming out. He was driving the province of Northern Ireland to leave Europe. Thankfully, the people voted to stay. But he's now saying, well, as a result of Brexit, there's issues that are happening in the province and how they can interlink with the mainland, as he says. So that is just either smoke and mirrors. But I also think the people of Northern Ireland have matured enough to realise we're getting on with our life. We want peace in Ireland. And over the years, I have worked with various governments in terms of seeking peace in Ireland. Both sides want to just have a country that they can get on with things. But the critical issues are coming down the tracks that the politicians are ignoring because they're literally playing games and trying to wind up situations.
Well, the green agenda, let's say, just from the green point of view, we should be able to do business with the north of Ireland. They should be able to do business with us instead of having to bring stuff from far-flung countries in and using up carbon and so on. Yeah. Surely we should be able to work with each other. And there is, at the moment, a pass-go situation between the north and the south of Ireland, the Republic and Northern Ireland, to that effect. It's the other way that they have the problem because of the protocol. Now, this is a problem which kind of effectively happened in 1922 as well. If you look back at the history, there were promises made and the can was kicked down the road firmly at the time. And we'll get on, we'll see how it goes. We really need to do
it's a
this.
A virtual can.
But
days,
Geoffrey Donaldson, on a serious note, has withdrawn the people from the intergovernmental councils and so on at the moment, or threatened to do that this week.
Yeah.
There's another issue of President Higgins not attending a commemoration of the foundation of the state of Northern Ireland, which is legitimate in some people's minds.
As you might say in Father Ted, that's an ecumenical manner, but that's
indeed
a constitutional manner in terms
absolutely.
Of the President of Ireland and a presence from another country on the island of Ireland in our constitution. But you just mentioned there about sustainability. And we heard during the week the Green Party, the best piece of news that came out of the Green Party was that they're going to suggested building a train line from Donegal to Cork. Like, that's cracker stuff. If you listen to Europe, and I'd encourage the listener to tune into either BBC or other programs that are on there and podcasts and follow a website called Politico. Like the 2021 United Nations Climate Conference that's on in Glasgow, between the 1st and the 12th of November, is going to be very interesting. But sustainability is great. It's creative. Everybody can get involved with it. But don't tax us. Don't hit us hard, because it's going to basically drive us away from it. And I just think there's so many opportunities. We talked about there a moment ago, you talked about timber. We looked at this week, yesterday, the Irish Times reported that the Department of Agriculture has no interest in timber. Timber, it grows in trees, it helps build houses, but also it helps us offset our carbon taxes. The more trees we grow, it's important. But there's a fun project that people can do.
Yeah.
And only this week, again, the farmers in Scotland and in Wales are annoyed because they're selling off old farms, and big city companies in London are now coming off and buying these farms in Scotland and in Wales to offset
their
carbon.
Okay, but just this is Near FM. You're listening to the business show, Nearby Business. If you want to get involved in the conversation, by text 087 69 44 500 straight through to the studio. And back to Paul Allen, our guest this evening. Okay, Paul, let's go further afield. Angela Merkel's finishing up in Germany. We've got a possible change of situation in Canada as well. What about that?
Yeah, Trudeau, his election is on the 20th of September, and I certainly feel he'll get trounced by an Irish-sounding man, Éireann O'Toole, in relation to what's going on. The German elections, that's coming up very shortly. That's on the 20th. That's the 26th, and the Canadian is 20th. And it's all going to change, but suddenly we're still in Ireland, still arguing over nonsense that happened in a hotel in Dublin. There's critical issues, and the future of Europe, like Ireland is part of that. We've done well with the UN, but we've seen it in other places, like the Portuguese elections, that's coming up in the early new year. We have the French elections, probably by March. So, you know, we need to open our eyes wide open in terms of what's going on. And an issue that I've been campaigning and always mentioning about, we need a minister for future thinking in terms of understanding what's going around, because we all do things retrospectively. And in business, it's great to do a set of accounts, but it's looking back in the past year. We need to see new business targets as to where we're going and what we hope to achieve in terms of targets. We're just walking around blind.
But is that not the way businesses go on? Not businesses, should I say. Governments go on, particularly coalition government organisations or coalition governments, should I say, coalition governments, let's say. Just that they're trying to please everybody and you end up pleasing nobody. They don't want to say too much in this direction, too much in that direction. And it gives a vacuum and a breeding ground to the far right or the far left, for instance, that nearly meet at the other end.
Sure.
In France,
Or the bots on social media who want to attack people who want to make sense about things and want to bring the left agenda really hard. But we need to have a central thinking. We need to have a thinking. We need to drive forward. Like, my heart goes out to anybody running a business, trying to run it either retail or in terms of the hospitality sector. The future, like, what's Christmas going to happen? Are we going to have more lockdowns? The UK, again, Boris is kite flying in the UK today. He says, oh, we might have smaller lockdowns.
Well, he said yesterday that he wasn't going to have any lockdowns again. So
there you go. I think he changes his mind as often as he may change his socks.
Yeah.
Which mightn't be too often.
Yeah.
I couldn't possibly.
The lockdowns have proven to be very, very economically costly. Thankfully, we've probably saved lots of lives because of the actions of the health authorities, and we're thankful for that.
Yeah, thank God.
You know, but it's easy to look back, and any Egypt can take an umbrella when it's raining, as they say.
Sure.
You know, to know when to do it is the right time to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So, Paul Allen PR, thank you very much for illuminating our studio this evening with your dulcet tones and your head of knowledge. Thanks very much for
thank
coming in
much.
To Nearby thank Business.
You.
Thanks a million. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Paul, as well. Now, in our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell looks at the €1 billion Celtic Interconnector project being undertaken by Airgrid.
Taking care of business on Nearby Business.
Like electricity. Electricity. Sparks inside of me. And I'm free.
It's great to be back, and as we move into a brand new season of Nearby Business, hopefully leaving the pandemic lingering at the back door, I am delighted to bring some exciting news of a large-scale project in Ireland in a new post-Brexit era where global markets are finally reopening. There is a renewed energy emerging as we are finally opening back up for business, and the first in-person trade mission since the COVID-19 pandemic and Brexit has taken place. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar visited Paris last week as part of his trade mission to discuss the impending plans for the new Celtic Interconnector project. Following many years of feasibility studies, engineers designing plans and engagement with local communities, finally on July 16th of this year, the application for the new €1 billion Celtic Interconnector power line, which will connect Ireland directly to France, was submitted. Following this, on July the 19th, a seven-week period of statutory consultation commenced, where Bord Pleanála began their assessment of the project plans, including landfall, cable route, converter stations, network connections and associated technologies. The Celtic Interconnector is a planned subsea link in order to allow the exchange of electricity between Ireland and France. Since 2011, Airgrid has been working with its French equivalent, Réseau de Transport Électricité, or RTE as it's known, to find the best way to develop this interconnector in order to benefit electricity customers and markets in Ireland, France and the EU. Airgrid's Chief Infrastructure Officer, Michael Mahan, said, "Submitting the planning application is a critical milestone for the Celtic Interconnector project. The delivery of this project will bring a number of benefits, including increasing Ireland's security of electricity supply by providing a direct connection to another EU country." Since 2006, Airgrid has operated and developed the National High Voltage Electricity Grid in Ireland. Airgrid is a state-owned company and is independent from ESB. They operate the flow of power on the grid and plan for its future, while ESB Networks is responsible for carrying out the maintenance and repairs and construction on the grid. The grid moves wholesale power around the country by bringing energy from generation stations to heavy industry and high-tech users. The grid also supplies the distribution network operated by ESB Networks that powers every electricity customer in the country. With work due to start in 2022 and planned completion by 2026, the Celtic Interconnector is co-funded by Airgrid and France's RTE with some co-financing from the EU. In 2019, they were awarded €530.7 million, Euro, more than half the cost from the European Commission's Connecting Europe facility, to complete the design and delivery of the Celtic interconnector, adding to EU funding previously received at the earlier planning stages. In 2009, Airgrid's interconnector economic feasibility report identified an interconnector with France as a good option to continue to integrate the European electricity system and benefit Irish consumers. It was considered the best route for the subsea cable to allow the exchange of electricity between the south coast of Ireland and the northwest coast of France. The interconnector will land at Claycastle Beach near Yall in Cork. From there, an underground cable will run inland on the National Road and continue on local roads to the east and north of Middleton to a converter station, which will be built at Ballyadam. The final connection will be by underground cable from Ballyadam to a substation on the national grid at Knockraha. Converter stations will also be built in each country to convert the electricity from HVDC to HVAC and vice versa, so it can move around between the Irish and French networks. The proposed subsea cable between Ireland and France will be approximately 575 kilometres in length, with 500 kilometres of this subsea offshore. The existing substations at Knockraha, Cork and La Martyre in France were identified as the best locations to connect the existing transmission system in each country, with a converter station to be built in an area close to both these locations. Once built, the Celtic interconnector will bring many benefits for Ireland, France and the EU. It will allow 700 megawatts of electricity to move between the countries, which is equal to supplying power to around 450,000 homes. It will make the supply of electricity more secure, as it would provide Ireland's only direct energy connection to an EU member state, following the UK's departure from the EU. It will also help us achieve our climate objectives and the government's goal of reaching 70% renewable energy generation by 2030 under the National Energy and Climate Plan. And most importantly, it will help drive down the cost of electricity for consumers, while also providing a direct telecommunications fibre optic link between Ireland, France and continental Europe. This project has come at the right time, as we may see ourselves moving into a period of unstable energy supply with the quiet threat of blackouts and our slow pace in switching to green renewables. Not forgetting, this is all happening under our noses as a massive chunk of electricity demand is devoured up by many huge data centres. In Ireland currently there are approximately 80 of these data centres, which are large computer systems that store business and internet data. They account for at least 20% of electricity demand. However, in the future we could see this number double to 40% if all the other data centres planned are fully developed. According to the industry body Host in Ireland, we are now home to 25% of all the data centres in the EU. The companies who own most of the data centres, such as Google, Amazon and Microsoft, have recently claimed they are being scapegoated for the problem of surging electricity demand in Ireland. In response to the news of the Celtic interconnector, Fianna Fáil TD James O'Connor described the potential for Yall Town as colossal, but stated that funding from Airgrid will be a major benefit for the communities in East Cork. He said, "The major aspect I think for communities out there is the community funding that has to be made available. Airgrid has committed to increasing the amount of money they are making available for communities, so that is quite significant for any community. The majority of the benefit will come from the aftermath of the project and from the point of view of the broadband connection. It does open up opportunities for potential technology investment and foreign direct investment in East Cork, which is currently non-existent. The project is also expected to create hundreds of jobs during the construction phase and many long-term economic benefits for the area, and is one to watch over the coming months following the 7-week consultation period. Overall, Irish people and Irish businesses support our climate action plans and do realise the urgent need to replace legacy energies such as oil, gas and coal with renewable energies such as wind and solar. What will become of the oil, coal, peat and some gas-fired power stations around Ireland, which inevitably will be closed and decommissioned? More and more of us will drive electric cars and we will switch our home boilers to heat pumps. But where is all the extra electricity going to come from? Primarily, it's going to come from more onshore and offshore wind turbines. Last year saw a big milestone achieved in Ireland's energy history, with 43% of electricity produced by renewables, which is finally heading in the right direction. The Celtic interconnector will add to this supply, but will require Airgrid to upgrade and expand the existing electricity grid in order to transfer this electricity around the country to where it's needed. This 2030 goal is just one stepping stone to getting us off oil and gas completely by 2050, where we will run our country completely on renewable energy. While pylons and wind turbines may not look aesthetically pleasing, they are, however, the future. Flicker, noise disturbance and other environmental impacts are important concerns that need careful consideration, but so does our planet. As James Cameron once said, The nation that leads in renewable energy will be the nation that leads the world.
And thanks a million to Jenny Tyrrell, our radio columnist, for that look at the 1 billion euro Celtic interconnector. Great engineering feat that would be, Dave.
Ah, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, love that. Yeah,
excellent, yeah. Great piece of infrastructure. Keep the lights on for another little while.
Yeah. Now, I hope they don't cut the cable too short when they're actually buying it.
No, it'd be very important not to. You've got some difficulty that small family businesses are having.
Yeah, it just kind of leads on from what we were talking about there a few minutes ago. But lots of businesses are affected by this. But family businesses say COVID unemployment supports are hindering their attempts to get people back working. A new report outlines the state's reliance on family businesses to increase numbers in the workforce, with corporate tax rules set to reduce Ireland's attraction to foreign employers. The National Family Business Sentiment Report 2021, it's compiled by the Family Business Network and business advisor Smith and Williamson. Based on survey findings and contacts with family business of all sizes across the country, the report found that family-owned businesses employ twice the number of people as foreign direct investment and state combined. Now, faster progress is needed in incentivising the return to work, as the pandemic unemployment payment has made it too easy for some former workers to prefer, and they prefer unemployment, the report states. So that's their position, not ours. We're just reporting it here. So obviously there are some people whose businesses haven't returned to anything like it should be. And I would count among those some of the hotel businesses, which we don't see any of the American tourists coming in, or any of those sort of big sort of coach loads of people, and people who would have worked in hotels and driven those coaches and all are still probably not working at all. So in fairness, there are people that will rely on it, but in other cases maybe people are not relying on it and using it as an excuse. So
absolutely,
that's the reporting we're doing on that.
One other interesting thing I have here is that you might remember the Volkswagen diesel scam, mm-hmm. and all the furore about emissions and so on. Well, three former Volkswagen managers and an ex-board member have gone on trial in Germany, accused of involvement in the global diesel scam that cost the company so far 32 billion euro in fines and compensation. And 6 years after the US authorities actually uncovered that scam, around 9 million Volkswagen brand vehicles that affect 9 million VW vehicles, the four faced charges of commercial and organised criminal fraud over a 9 month period, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah,
amazing.
There you go. Just time for this now.
AOB on Nearby Business.
So just time to squeeze in our any other business this evening. The Irish health tech platform WebDoctor says it is now valued at 48 million euro following a 3 million investment from private equity investor Venture Wave Capital. WebDoctor allows people to have an online video consultation with a doctor. It also helps doctors automate their booking and payment processes. The latest funding will be used to accelerate WebDoctor's international growth and expansion, as well as scaling its sales, marketing, product and technology teams, according to a statement from the company. Since its establishment back in 2013, the company has processed over 3 million bookings to GPs, pharmacies and other health-related clinics, and now has over 350,000 Irish patients registered on its GP platform. And the demand, not surprisingly, I suppose, for telehealth during COVID has skyrocketed, the company said, with WebDoctor itself experiencing a 75% increase in revenue from 2019 to 2020. VentureWave's capital team will work alongside WebDoctor executives, including the newly appointed CEO David Crimmins, to drive the company's post-pandemic growth and its expansion into new markets. And VentureWave Capital Chairman and Managing Partner Alan Foy will also join WebDoctor's Board of Directors following the investment. And we wish them luck with that. Well, that's it, Dave, for another week, another edition of Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back live here next Thursday at 6 p.m.
Yeah, and if you'd like to get involved with the program or contribute in any way, we'd like to hear from you at our Twitter page there. Our Twitter handle is @nearby_business, #localbiz.
So from myself, Declan Ralph.
And me, Dave Daly.
We'll see you soon on the radio. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.